In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
Should food be taxed in South Dakota? Voters get to decide. From SDPB, today is Wednesday, September 18th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, Initiated Measure 28 asks voters to weigh in on taxes. The governor argued for a grocery tax repeal during her campaign, but she has declined to support IM-28. State legislators considered a grocery tax repeal, but eventually chose a different avenue of tax reduction last session. Here are a few of the issues. Is it right to tax groceries? Who does the tax impact the most? What exactly would this new law do anyway? Would it remove the tax on food and food ingredients? Or would it eliminate the tax on far more than eggs and milk? Proponents and opponents see it much differently. Let's dive in. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, if it passes, South Dakota Initiated Measure 28 would prohibit state sales taxes on anything sold for human consumption. The language of the measure excludes alcohol and prepared foods. Democrat Rick Wyland leads Take It Back. That's the organization pushing this ballot initiative. He says efforts to repeal the food tax have been ongoing.
Well, let's start with the history. It's been an ongoing effort to remove the state tax on food for almost 20 years in the state legislature. Every year it seems to come up. One year it actually passed one of the chambers, but it's never been able to get through. And that's why, you know, direct democracy exists in South Dakota. When the legislature refuses to move forward on something that the voters want, you know, you can take it to the voters, and if you're successful in your petition drive, get it on the ballot and then give them a choice. Right now, 66%, according to a Newswatch poll, of registered voters support the repeal of the state share of the tax. You know, but more to the point, this is really about providing some relief to low-income families who end up spending sometimes upwards of 30% of their household income just to feed their families. Feeding South Dakota has done some recent research. I saw it changed a little bit, actually gotten worse, that there are like 106,000 South Dakotans who are what they call food insecure. They don't know where their next meal's coming from. And one out of six of those are kids. South Dakota is one of two states in the entire country that still taxes food at the full allowable rate. Other states have either gotten rid of the tax, reduced the tax, provided some kind of rebate, you know, to those low-income families, but not South Dakota. So it's long overdue. And then I would only add as a kicker, even Governor Noem in her reelection campaign, having been out and about, you know, talking with voters and campaigning for reelection, did a 180. She decided, well, now's the time. This is a really regressive tax. It disproportionately affects people of modest means, and it needs to go. And I was really hoping that she was going to be successful. You think she would. You think she would because we got 105 people in the legislature, and 94 of them are in her party, only 11 Democrats. You'd think it would have been a slam dunk, but she couldn't get it done. So we did. We collected 25,000 signatures. It was qualified, and the voters are going to get a chance to vote.
6 weeks before her reelection, she's in a grocery store surrounded by families saying, this is what I'm going to bring to the people of South Dakota. It's not a big stretch to say some people went to the polls for her because of that final push. Probably not the only reason they voted for her, but certainly that helped boost her numbers at the polls, took a little wind out of Jamie Smith's sails, perhaps. However, she is not supporting IM-28 for a couple of reasons that she has spoken about. What do you think is happening there politically?
Well, I think, you know, it's just a good synopsis. I think that, you know, we made a real point after it failed in the legislature, and she said she was going to sign our petition. to basically use what she said during the campaign and even post-campaign as she was struggling to get it through. You know, I think she probably just came up under a lot of party pressure to back off on it. She wanted it over that 0.3%, and also indicated that this was going to get on the ballot. And then now what are they going to do? You know, they passed this 0.3%, and now we've got a grocery state share of the tax that's 4.2% that would be removed. And according, and I hope we can get into this, to the fiscal note, at the time it was $123.9 million.
Mm-hmm. And that sunsets in 2027 because state lawmakers were also aware that this food tax bill, this initiated Measure 28, which is what we're calling it now, was potentially coming and that voters felt strongly about this. So again, the governor's been aware, lawmakers have been aware, it's here. But the argument, as always, this is not a new argument, it's not the first time you've heard it, is that the bill is not written in the way that it needs to be written. Let's start with that. Can municipalities tax food if IM 28 is passed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The fiscal note, which the LRC put together, which they're required to if it is going to cost the state some money, specifically says in the fiscal note that the estimated amount of revenue the state would lose or taxpayers would save would be $123.9 million. And that is only based on removing the state's share of the tax off of food. That's what the fiscal note says. And then at the bottom of the fiscal note, it says municipalities can continue to collect the tax. Okay? So we circulated that petition and that fiscal note when we were out collecting signatures. That's what the voters signed up for. Okay? And even the Attorney General has weighed in and said that this will not affect municipalities, okay, and their ability to collect the tax. So what really bothers me is there are people on the opposite side of this initiative that keep perpetrating this misinformation, you know, to, you know, essentially, I mean, I don't know why they're doing it. It seems to me that when they launched their committee in opposition to IM-28, I think they called themselves South Dakotans Against a State Income Tax. Now, just break that down a little bit, okay? You know, to me, that's an argument everybody at some point runs around the track when something like this happens, something like this where the voters might be able to decide something. There is no way, and I won't swear on your show, but there's no way that the Republican Party is going to advocate and pass a progressive state income tax. It's just not going to happen. There's no support in the state for that. But it's a great scare tactic. And that's a big tell, in my opinion, that lays to bear all the other arguments they keep throwing up. And they're not talking about the state income tax now. I don't hear that very much because we went after that pretty aggressively. Not going to happen. Not going to happen in my lifetime. I doubt even the handful of Democrats out there would support it. It'd be a career ender. It's just not very popular. So why do they lead with that? Well, because they want to win and they think that will motivate people to vote against it. Well, then you add all their other arguments, and we talked about municipalities being able to collect the tax, which is also disinformation on their part. And then we can get into the whole idea of what gets taxed.
That's the second thing I was going to bring up about consumable. Right. And the example is if recreational marijuana passes, you're not going to be able to see the tax benefits of that because a gummy, for example, is meant for human consumption.
Well, they also argue that gasoline is consumed and toilet paper is consumed and pharmaceuticals are consumed.
Are we going to be able to tax weed?
Right, right. Well, no, because it's not a food item.
But it's human consumption.
Right.
Is that going to have to be clarified further?
Well, it can be if it needs to be. But understand that when the LRC put this together, they do that as the sponsor of this amendment. We work with the LRC on language, right? And one of the things they said to us was eating and drinking is too vague. You should use words like consumption, you know, or ingestion. And we ended up going with consumption. We thought it was broad enough, but specific enough. and it's not alcoholic beverages or prepared foods. That's written right into the language. Well, they didn't come up with $123.9 million based on taxing marijuana, taxing tobacco, or removing those taxes. Okay, right. Removing those taxes. That fiscal note was targeted specifically at food that people eat. Okay, now, in further answer to your question, the legislature loves to tamper with initiated laws. That's why you see a lot of groups like ours opting to do constitutional amendments. It's harder for the legislature to mess with them. But I've said this numerous forums throughout the state. You know, if all these things are of real concern to the legislature, they can go in and change things to make them more definitive. They can provide clarifying legislation as long as they don't mess with the 4.2% that drove the $123.9 million in tax savings on food. If they don't mess with the rate, we'll work with them on all the rest of this stuff. And they can do it like that. They have, well, we'll see what they have after this election, but right now they got about 95% of the legislature.
You don't like it when they tinker with what the voters have sent to them.
Right, and they shouldn't
tinker
with...
You've been pretty clear on that in the past.
Right, but you know...
So now you're saying they can fix what you sent to them.
Well, they shouldn't have to fix it. I don't think they have to fix it.
Okay.
Their whole campaign is based on a bunch of hypotheticals, right? Could, might, may, possibly. I mean, they had the same LRC that helped us develop our language and provide that fiscal note that we handed out to 25,000 people that was written in to our ballot measure. They came up with a $646 million fiscal analysis based on anything that you would consume. And the food is listed there, but so is gas. So are drugs. So is, like, household
so
products.
So you think if this gets tested in the court,
right,
and recreational marijuana passes, that recreational marijuana will still be able to be taxed? Cigarettes will still be able
yes.
to tax?
Yes.
If that's what you're saying?
Yes. Absolutely.
It's already as it's written.
Yeah.
If there's a court challenge, you think it will stand up to scrutiny?
Absolutely. The court will look at what the LRC said, okay? And they'll know where those numbers were generated from. It wasn't taking the tax off all the things you talked about. It was taking the tax off of food. And they'll look at the ability for municipalities to collect taxes. And they'll look, most importantly, at the will of the voters, what the voters decided, okay? So there's a bunch of material out there right now where I do believe the opposition has really crossed over the line when it comes to facts. And when you have the LRC confirming what we're saying and the Attorney General confirming what we're saying, when it comes to municipalities, which is one of their biggest arguments right now, are going to be left out and can't do that. It's just simply not true. And the other thing that's, I think, extremely important is that when the citizens organize and, you know, make it possible to put a law on the books through an initiated measure, that's the new law. And that supersedes all the other existing laws on that subject. Mm-hmm. And that's why they have a big megaphone. They've got a lot of groups involved in this. I have been getting calls almost daily from cities that are struggling with this because they know it's probably a good thing for their citizens, for their residents, but they're not sure it's going to be a good thing for their budgets. And so I'm out there trying to do the best I can to get the information out.
You can afford to pay a food tax. I can afford to pay a food tax. We're aware that there are many people around us who cannot afford to pay a food tax. The entire tax rate went down for everybody. Isn't there
0.3%?
0.3%.
Right.
Isn't there another way to come at this with credits, with food programs, to where you are targeting to help the people who need that help, but you're collecting the food tax from visitors and people like you?
Well, it hasn't happened in 20 years, Lori, and there have been efforts to do that. At one time, I was told by a legislator in a forum that we actually still had a credit program for taxpayers. But it lasted, I think it came out of sometime in the mid to late 2000s when Rounds was governor and it was passed. but it just, they didn't do a very good job. It wasn't very workable, and they ended up shutting it down and giving a bunch of money to some nonprofits that were dealing with food issues or hunger issues. You know, like I said, we're the only one of two states that are still taxing at the state level at the full rate. Other states have figured this out. 4.2% for, you know, a low-income family going to make a huge difference versus 0.3% for the rest of us on everything else we buy. I mean, it's, you know, I remember being in a discussion with the legislators. Well, we wanted to take the tax off of fireworks, you know, 0.3%. We wanted to take the tax off of everything across the board. Well, Noam didn't want to do it. I think she was right. This is where the need is, and that's what we're focused on.
The same people who will benefit the most from not having a food tax may also be the same people who are benefiting from state services that in theory could be cut with a big reduction in the state budget. If the state is not collecting the tax on food, then they're funding DSS and the Department of Labor and all the state services that we need, many of which reach low-income individuals. What happens to the state budget with a $129.3 million reduction?
Well, according to Governor's Chief Bureau of Finance Officer Twilliger, when they were talking about the tax in the session in 2023, is that he's quoted as saying, even with the most conservative projections, we're going to be fine. We're not going to have to cut. That's what he said. We've got the money. The money's there. It's a stable source. We'll be fine. That was the argument they were pushing back in 2023.
The sales tax is robust enough.
Exactly.
If you remove the human consumables or the food or the grocery tax, whatever the language is that makes someone happy right now, it's going to be enough to sustain the state budget.
That was
services.
What they were saying.
That's what they were saying in 2023. Yeah. When the governor was pushing.
Was pushing. Right. So then they're going to, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, the whole argument of about a state income tax because we're going to blow a hole in the budget at $123.9 million a year is a joke. Okay, that ain't going to happen. But as I said, that's the tell on everything else they're saying, too. $123.9 million isn't, I mean, it's a chunk of money, but all the arguments, oh, my God, now it's going to hurt the teachers. It's going to hurt the firefighters. It's going to hurt, you know, the potholes and the roads and the bridges and all this stuff. There's $1.4 billion in the 2025 budget, okay, for sales tax and use tax exemptions. I'll send you the breakdown, okay? It seems like anybody that's got the ability to hire a lobbyist and work the halls of the Capitol and Pier seems to be able to get a sales tax reprieve for their special interest. Who's out there representing, you know, those working, you know, low-income families just trying to feed their kids? But that's what direct democracy gives South Dakota, unlike other states that don't have it. When you don't like what Pierre's doing or not doing, you can organize, collect enough signatures, and let the people decide on issues like the food tax. And I said earlier in this interview, according to the poll that was done in June, this is extremely popular. I've never worked on a ballot measure that had 66.4% support. People want this, and I'm very confident it's going to happen.
Rick Weiland referenced South Dakota's Legislative Research Council in that interview. In a letter to Weiland, the LRC referenced the statutory definition of food. That definition includes the terms ingestion, chewing, and consumed. Then the LRC recommended this wording as part of a suggested rewrite. Here's a quote. The retail sale of any food or food ingredient for any purpose is exempt from any tax imposed by law. Now, here is the language that was finalized as part of IM-28. Another quote. The state may not tax the sale of anything sold for human consumption, except alcoholic beverages and prepared food. Now we'll have more on the importance of those words, human consumption, after the break. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we're talking about South Dakota Initiated Measure 28, that would repeal the state tax on anything sold for, quote, human consumption. Jonathan Ellis is co-founder of the independent news journal, The Dakota Scout. He has a long history of reporting on the food tax efforts in the state and other political food news.
You know, I guess I see both sides, and I have fairly broad experience in this matter in terms of having been a reporter who sued the USDA for food stamp redemption data way back when, in a case that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court ultimately. And one of the questions that, you know, surrounding that whole program was, why can't they take out certain foods out of that would qualify for food stamps, like sodas, chips, things like that? And it actually, the food industry lobby, it's very complex. So the people who are advocating for this think it's just very easy to come up with. But, if you talk to people who are in the industry, it's a more complex issue than that.
What did you want to know about the food stamps or the SNAP benefits and how they were being spent? You were trying to get information then.
Yeah, we were trying to get the yearly amounts that the retailers who participate in the program, what they were receiving. There were many benefits for that in our perspective, having that data, because there's about 9 or 10 different store groups that are in that lumped into that program. And our interest was in looking at some of the smaller establishments, what they were making in redemption sales.
And that information, they did not want to give it to you.
Oh, no. Like I said, we went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where ultimately, unfortunately, we lost.
I have a pretty strong memory of the first time that I heard about the drive to repeal the tax on food. And it was the first time I interviewed Billy Sutton in Pierre, and he had a food tax button on. Mm-hmm. And Governor Dennis Dugard was on the show, too, and he pounded the table and said, most people are perfectly capable of paying a food tax. So it was one of the first issues when I started in this job.
Yeah.
The Democrats were pushing hard. The Republicans were pushing against it. And it got a lot more complicated after that.
Yeah, it's been an issue for quite a while. And like you said, the Democrats have been the proponents of that, arguing that, you know, it's a regressive tax, that people with lower incomes pay much more of taxes than others do with higher incomes, because at the end of the day, we all kind of consume food. So they argued it's regressive. And the Republicans will say that, you know, by and large, I mean, there's certainly a faction that wants it repealed. But by and large, over the decades, have argued that, well, because it's a very broad tax, the sales tax is very broad, and the food is part of the stability that goes into that tax base for services that the government provides. I remember during the Great Recession, when you would see the graphs of state budgets that were being slashed in states that were heavily relying on, for example, income taxes, mm-hmm. you saw much deeper budget cuts that had to be made there than you did necessarily. And I mean, South Dakota, of course, there was a drop in the budget, but the revenues were, by and large, a little more consistent. So that's an argument in favor of, if you're in favor of these government services, that you retain some kind of like broad sales tax. Again, it's regressive, though. You can't argue that, you know, people who are poorer are going to pay more. I do like to point out, and this is sometimes lost, that the tax doesn't apply to people who are on SNAP benefits, right? That they're not taxed. So when you go and use your EBT card, there's no tax on that.
All right. And then there was a moment last year, where the Freedom Caucus, Governor Kristi Noem, and the Democrats mm-hmm. all were pushing for the same thing, which was to eliminate the food tax. What happened? What was happening politically when Governor Kristi Noem was running for re-election?
Well, I mean, she made that a major issue. Mm-hmm. You know, she made stops throughout the state where she rang up groceries, bagged people's groceries, and made it the point that this is something that she wanted to repeal. And there was among a lot of Republicans, not just the Freedom Caucus, but among a faction of Republicans, that we need to do something because we're running these pretty big state budget surpluses. We've built up reserve funds. We need to find a place to cut taxes. And the debate was where to do that. Mm. Was it a broader sales tax for everything? Was it the food tax specifically? Was it property tax relief? And so this was one of the items within a broader debate about where taxes should be cut. There was pretty uniform belief among a lot of lawmakers that there should be tax cuts. It just was a question of like where.
The lawmakers did not pass the food tax reduction that she was asking for. They passed an overall reduction right. in the overall sales tax with the sunset clause. Mm-hmm. What was happening politically as you were hearing those conversations in Pierre?
Well, I mean, she was upset that that didn't get passed. I mean, she expressed her frustration with that because she had obviously ran on that. Mm-hmm. It had been a major issue, again, during her campaign. And so I think that that was a promise that she sincerely wanted to deliver. And when it didn't happen, I mean, at the end of the day, she went ahead and you know, somewhat reluctantly went ahead with the broader overall tax cut. But that was not what she wanted, and she made that very clear.
So what's happening now with this ballot measure? Is it related to that sunset clause at all? Were lawmakers looking to the future and realizing, hey, this is going to be a ballot question, so we need to provide a back door at some point so we can get out of this tax? Like, help us understand what was spoken openly about the trial run of the tax reduction.
Yeah, that was part of it, concern that this would be on the ballot. And there was concern there. There was broader concerns about the economy, of inflation, what that was doing, what that would do to state budget revenues. Mm-hmm. And so among more of the, I use this word conservative, but conservative with regard to the state budget in terms of trying to leave it alone, you know, there was this sense of, okay, well, if we're going to do this, we need to be able to have a sunset clause and we can revisit this and figure out in 4 years, like what does it look like now? What's the landscape look like now? So that really kind of won the day.
So now it's going to be up to the voters with IM-28. How much do you think it matters? Because we hear this all the time. We like the idea, but the bill is written wrong. Or, you know, this is a good concept and everybody means well, but there's unintended consequences. That's a common political argument. In this case, do you think that the ballot measure is written the way the proponents want it to be written, or are there unintended consequences?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a legal scholar or anything, and everything's open to fairly, you know, in judicial interpretations and things like that. I will say this. I was talking not even about this topic with a lawyer a couple of days ago who has broad experience in government affairs kind of issues. And he was just saying, I wish they would have come to me before they put this on the ballot, because I, you know, he didn't have a dog in the fight one way or the other, but I would have said, you need to write it this way. And so this is, again, somebody who's a very well-known in the legal community who has reservations about how it's written. And so I think I inform myself with his opinions, but then, you know, you let the proponents are like, nah, it'll be fine. Well, I mean, you know, take that to the Supreme Court. Is it going to be fine? You know, it's hard to know. And I think that there are legitimate concerns, again, from people I've talked to who say that this is going to open itself up to, you know, some judicial scrutiny for sure.
Yeah. So how smart is the electorate? Because food tax repeal is popular.
It is and it isn't. I've told you
nobody's noticed the reduction in taxes that they. I mean, I don't hear anybody going like, I have so much more money in my budget now after the lawmakers and peer reduced taxes. They want everybody wants more, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will say, so I think I've told this story on your show before, but I'll tell it again, because when Governor Noem was doing one of her bagging groceries down here at Sunshine Foods, I was talking to grocers who were, you know, there shopping for them, and I talked to one lady in particular. I said, is this something you would support, food? She's like, absolutely. And then she looked at me and I didn't bring this up, but she goes, but not if it means an income tax. And that's the issue that this is kind of tied to. And the proponents now are trying to say, well, the Republicans will never pass an income tax. Well, it's all smoke and mirror. And maybe that's true. But I would say this, that the proponents of repealing it, they're the ones who tied it to the income tax. And we can go back into history and look at that. But in 1992, the measure that was on the ballot would have repealed the tax on food and replaced it with an income tax. And so they themselves actually tied this issue
in 1992.
Now, again, it came back in 2004, and Mike Rounds, who was the governor, you know, new governor, he really was sort of the advocate against defeating it. Of course, Rounds had been in the Senate and a Senate leader, and so he understood that the taxes and what it would mean. But again, he was saying, "Hey, this is going to be an income tax, and we're going to need to make up this income, you know, this tax revenue somewhere." So then, again, that was successful in branding it that way. Both of those, the 92 and 2004 measures, lost by significant margins. I mean, they were landslide losses. And so now here we are, 20 years later, and since in those 20 years, as you point out, the legislature, as many times Democrats have brought bills, they know they don't get out of committee. The argument is, I mean, so they didn't listen to voters. I mean, maybe now you can wait. 20 years is long enough. We can weigh in on it again. But over those years, like, well, no, the voters weighed in pretty heavily. They wanted to keep it.
Okay, now, so there's nothing in IM-28 that says there's going to be an income tax.
No.
And Rick Weiland says, look,
right.
this state
ludicrous.
Lawmakers are not going to pass this income
right.
tax. No, but that is politically suicide for anyone who is Republican in South Dakota. It's never going to pass. So why are you, it's deceptive to bring it up now is what he is going to argue.
I get what he's saying, and that may or may not be true. I mean, I don't know. We don't know what things are going to look like in 5 years. But, they intentionally, the people who wanted to repeal this way back when, this is before Rick Weiland was involved in it, I mean, they tied it to an income tax. And so they made it pretty easy to do. And, you can go back to when the general sales tax was applied to in state history back during the Depression. I mean, it was tied to other tax relief. It's like, hey, we're going to cut property taxes, but we're going to apply a general sales tax that had at the time only been applied, I think, to gasoline and maybe liquor or something like that. They made it very broad when they enacted that, and I believe 1935, it was based on tax reduction. So it's always been tied to other tax and revenue sources.
If recreational marijuana passes, can it be taxed?
Yes.
As you're looking at how these two measures would coincide, because the argument is that's a human consumable, and if you're selling an edible in a store, you can't tax it because that's for human consumption. And Rick Weiland says, no, the will of the people is clear they want that to be taxed.
Don't call it a sales tax. Call it a sin tax. I don't know. But, I mean, you find a way around that. Find a lawyer. They can write that.
So if this passes, if IM-28 passes, there's almost certainly going to be debate and conversation and possibly judicial review to find out where in this vast range of how much this is going to cost the state is the reality.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this will go, I'll bet a steak dinner that this goes to court. You know?
No bet.
And then there's also the issue of the municipalities. Now it specifically says that municipalities can continue to collect their 2%. But you have the municipal league, and again, my lawyer I talked to about this. Again, we weren't even talking about this, but it just came up. But he says, in state law that that they can't collect a tax. If it's they can't collect it, they can't collect it for the cities. And so there are some legal issues surrounding that part, too. So there are definitely question marks that I think will require judicial review.
Right. So Governor Noem's tax was like, we're going to do 0%. And that's why that weird 0% was there, because we're still taxing it. And that meant the municipalities could tax it because the state was still taxing it. They were just taxing it at a 0% rate.
They weren't collecting it.
They weren't going to collect anything. And then
but they could collect it.
And
they
Rick Weiland's argument is, no, this is going to supersede other laws. There's a line that says municipalities can tax any of this stuff. Again, you're being foolish to try to sink something that you don't want. Or you're being deceptive. That would be his argument, yeah?
Yeah, that would be his argument. And I get why he's making that argument. I also get why the people who want to leave it as the status quo are tying it to the income tax. I mean, because that's a potent issue.
Yeah.
Those are political questions. But I do think that there are legitimate legal issues that will have to be resolved one way or the other. And Rick might be 100% correct, and the Supreme Court comes back and says, well, no, this was the intent, and this was,
Right. And voters get to decide.
Voters get to decide.
One more time.
And there's not much of a campaign, in 2004, Mike Rounds was very, very active in leading opposition to that. Well, Governor Noem can't do that because she championed this proposal. So now you have sort of a void of leadership of opposition, at least right now. I mean, obviously the chambers come out against it, the retailers and some business groups.
Yeah.
I mean, they're again, let's status quo, the budget works. Leave it as it is. Don't upset the apple cart. And I think then obviously what happens if it is repealed, you'll probably that sunset we talked about in the general sales tax certainly goes away in my guess, and there'll probably be another broader. There'll probably be a sales tax increase on everything else.
Yeah. Anything else from the history of this that I don't know enough to ask you from your coverage that you think is important to bring out? Like, what are you waiting to see pop up again? Which argument?
The general sales tax was at a time in the 1930s when it was started at 2%, at a time when the government revenues were crashing during the Depression. it was championed by Tom Barry, second Democrat elected in state history to the governorship. The Republican who came next said, "I really want to do away with this, but you know, but we don't have the revenues to do it now." And not only did he not do it, he increased it to 3%. And so it's just been kind of a gradual ratcheting. 1969, it goes to 4%. And I believe in the under Farrar, too, that then cities start to get the ability to tax at 1%. And then cities get a second penny sales tax. And then the most recent hike has been in 2016, where it went up to 4.5%. And that was to help pay for the grand education, the teacher pay raises, and things like that.
Blue Ribbon
Task Force, it's been a gradual increase over the decades, and it's kind of like, once you get a tax, it doesn't really ever go away. You know, and that it has not, even though people have wanted to get rid of it.
Yeah, the grand effort to get teachers out of last place,
right,
in teacher pay, which we're still discussing whether that's actually been accomplished.
Yeah,
yeah, and then it went back down, and then the Wayfair decision comes in there
too,
whether or not we're collecting sales tax or
Internet tax.
Thank you.
And if you want to be very, this is what it said, the Partridge Amendment. Yeah. You know, about how, you know, this tax, you know, goes away if we start, you know, or goes ratchets down based on what we collect off internet. But now they're like, oh well, they kind of, you know, well, they've interpreted that in the sense that, you know, well, now those are actually businesses here, and yeah, so it's there's a way of playing with language in legislation.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Earlier this hour, we heard from a proponent of Initiated Measure 28. IM-28 would prohibit state taxes on anything sold for human consumption, with the exception of alcohol and prepared food. Now we hear from an opponent. Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Tenhaken also stopped by SDPB's Kirby Family Studio to share his thoughts on the measure.
So IM-28 is, as people know, is a ballot initiative that would repeal the tax on what's called anything for human consumption. And when I started to learn more about it and unpack what the kind of unintended consequences are of IM-28 and what it could mean at the municipal level, I just felt the need to get engaged. You know, saw what it could do to our city budgets, not just my budget. Here in Sioux Falls, but talking with my mayoral colleagues across the state, there was just an increasing level of concern of what this, I think, well-intended but poorly written ballot initiative could do. I felt the need to get involved. And trust me, I don't enjoy being the opposition face of something. I'm very busy in my job, but to protect our residents and taxpayers, felt the need to get engaged.
I want to get deeper into what exactly the ballot question says, what the measure says and what it doesn't say, what you think those unintended consequences are. But first, let's talk about food insecurity and that you have seen in Sioux Falls, the kind of programs that you have and how you think that people would be helped when they don't have enough money to buy food. Inflation is high. You know that. You've talked about that.
Yeah, you know, I think if we could wave a magic wand, I think all of us would not like to have food taxed, okay? But remember, this is not a food tax ballot initiative. If it was, it would say food. It doesn't. It says consumables. And that therein lies our big issue. I mean, what will happen, Lori, and we'll get into this, is, well, the money you may save on the sales tax on food or consumables or whatnot is going to create huge budget gaps in the social services that we provide, public health initiatives we provide, community programs, transit dollars, all those budget shortfalls that we'll have. So there's a trade-off. Everything's a trade-off. So you if you want to pay less in tax there, it's going to come at a huge reduction of services somewhere else, or a new revenue source that will have to be found to make up that delta, whether that's property taxes or state income tax or whatever that might be.
Let's talk about what is a consumable. As you read this legislation, what do you think it will remove the tax on?
Well, I don't know. So that's issue number one, is the legislature or the courts are going to have to define what a consumable is. Right now, the nonpartisan, bipartisan, you know, legislative research council for the state has said that the state impact could be up to, $670 million to the state budget, because the way it's written right now, tobacco would fall under a consumable, toothpaste, a consumable, paper, things we consume in our households, shampoo, dog food, all those things fall under the definition of a consumable.
How does shampoo fall under a human consumable?
We consume it. We use it.
We don't eat it.
You don't eat it. But if you look at Dollar General's annual report, and this is just how Dollar General classifies consumables by their definition, 90% of their store they have listed as consumable. They have pet food as one of their consumables. They have all their beauty products as consumables because it's stuff people repeat and use on a regular basis and it runs out. It's not like a dishwasher you buy or a car you buy. But the gas you put in your car, you could even make an argument that that's something that gets reused and burned through on a regular basis. So I think if the intention was to remove the sales tax on food and food products, it should have said food and food products. But by not saying that, it created a vagueness that's creating a lot of the unintended consequences that we're worried about.
So the definition of consumable being anything that people use up and have to replace would hit that possible really high budget impact. For the proponents of this bill, they're like, obviously, that's not what people want. They really want it to be on food and drink that you consume. Mm-hmm. And this is a scare tactic. What would your response be?
My response would be that if that's the intent, then it should have been written that way. And since it's not, we really question what is the intent of this ballot initiative. Is it to move us towards a state income tax? The governor introduced a bill like this a year ago in the last session. But the definition of that bill said remove the state tax or set the state tax to 0% on food and food products. Okay, food and food ingredients, I think it was. Very specific. No ambiguity, okay? Alcohol is not food. Tobacco is not food. Marijuana is not food. Pet food is not even food. It's for human food and food ingredients. So if that was the intent, write it that way. It's not. So the legal ramifications of this are a challenge. Do I hope the legislature would fix this? If it passes, yeah, but hope is not a strategy for me. I'd rather take another bite at this apple. If the people really want this, then let's kill it this year. And then let's take a run at it with the proper wording, the proper language, and also the proper revenue replacement. So if my wife says, hey, Paul, I don't want to work anymore, I'd say, great. How are we going to replace your revenue to pay the bills? Oh, well, we'll worry about that later. I just want to stop working. Well, that's not a good plan. And that's what we're doing with IM-28. We're removing all this revenue, and there's no plan for replacing it. So two things will happen. We will tax more things to make up for it, or we will cut services. It's as simple as it gets.
You have seen the complexity of the budget. If this passes, what do you think the next mayor will have on his or her hands?
Well, depending on how broad or narrow that definition of consumables becomes, we could see shortfalls of $15 to $20 million and potentially even more every single year in our budget. That is a substantial, substantial hit to the city of Sioux Falls' budget every year, compounded by the fact that the state could see up to $670 million a year of a $7.5 billion budget. So if you think about that, what would get cut? What usually gets cut first when our state has a really short budget? Education, social services programs, some of those social safety net programs that we have in the state. So a lot of the people who would benefit maybe the most by saving the few cents on the sales tax would be hurt the most by the reduction in services that would have to take place because of the lack of funding, both locally and at the state level.
Do you have a sense of just the amount of the budget that's going towards some of those services?
Sure.
It's going toward, and what I'm trying to get at is there are already programs in place that help people. You can pay the food tax. I can pay the food tax.
Right.
There are a lot of people who can't. Are there enough services in place to provide relief for the people who can't pay the food tax if IM-28 fails? Or is that something that you need to look more closely at as the mayor and say, we can do better to help people feed their families?
It's a great question. And I do think food insecurity and the cost of food, period, today is a real issue. So I want to go on record saying it's an issue, and I totally understand that. Even our family budget, and when I see the grocery bill, my jaw hits the floor. And so any savings in that would be a welcome reprieve for anyone. But I think the challenge with this, Lori, just getting back to the core of the issue is, if you want to do an initiative like this, you first need to talk to state officials and city officials and say, hey, would this make sense? And if we say it wouldn't, and here's why, but what about this? But what if we did this? What if there's this program that would do the same thing? Another poorly written part of this, Lori, which I think is most concerning, is even though the ballot initiative says cities and municipalities will continue to be able to collect tax, it's written in there, state law says otherwise. This, municipalities cannot collect a tax on anything the state does not also tax. So if the state repeals it, we have to repeal it. What Governor Noem was proposing last year was setting the state's percentage to 0%, not a repeal, 0%. So it's semantics, but what that would mean is the state's still collecting. The tax still exists. They're just charging 0%. So we could have still collected under Governor Noem's bill. Huge difference. So right now, we'll have to figure out how can we unwind that so that we could still collect, which the ballot initiative says, but state law doesn't allow. So the legislature would have to fix that as well, and we would have to hope, you know, that they would do that. And I don't know if I want to put my, you know, city budget next year on a hope strategy.
Wouldn't the new law take precedent over any old law that said you couldn't collect?
It would
if it has that sentence in it that says, yeah, the cities can, municipalities can keep doing this, doesn't that?
It would instantly be in conflict with state law. And so
isn't the most recent one an updated? No.
So we would have to, it would not supersede the existing law on the books, because what that would do is basically say we could tax anything now. If, you know, the state doesn't tax, I mean, I don't know, pick an item, water, but we want to start taxing water. So we could start taxing water. We could start taxing things. So that law, if that changes, would open up a whole bunch of things for us. So there's legislative, like, issues all up and down with IM-28. So I think the recap for me would just be well-intended, poorly written, unintended consequences. I'm not saying it doesn't have a merit worthy of discussion, but we need to take another run at this if this is really what our voters want and really what our people want, and say, how can we do this in a responsible manner that's not going to cut programs, not going to cut services, create huge budget shortfalls, but still provides, I think, what people are looking for in some cases, which is relief to people at the grocery store specifically.
That was Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Tenhaken. You can hear more about each of the ballot measures Thursday night at the Vote South Dakota Forum. We will live stream the forum on SDPB-TV, Facebook, and YouTube. The forum is held at Dakota Wesleyan University in Mitchell. It's free. It's open to the public. It begins at 8 p.m. Central Time. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. On the next In the Moment, join us for a live broadcast featuring children's authors from the South Dakota Festival of Books. We have in the studio Olympic champion Billy Mills, SD Nelson, Donna Janelle Bowman, and Tracy Hoff. Come make live radio with us. We'll open the doors to the Sioux Falls studio at about 11:30. We are at the corner of 4th Street and Phillips Avenue near the Levitt Shell in Sioux Falls. If you can't join us live on Thursday, listen at noon Central and 7 p.m. Central. You can also come make some public radio within the moment at the South Dakota Festival of Books, Friday and Saturday, September 20th and 21st in Brookings. We'll see you there. From all of us at SDPB, thank you for listening.